Another episode of the Mercury FDI Talks. It's a pleasure to have with us Joanna Kay today, because it's an episode of Advanced Hydrogen, of course. Joanna, she's expert in hydrogen affairs from Australia, of course. And we will be discussing the opportunities in green hydrogen in Australia, abroad, and collaborations with Australia. Joanna, it's a pleasure and it's an honor to have you with us.
Fantastic. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Let's start from the very, very beginning, Joanna. Let's explain everyone about the role of the Smart Energy Council, which you are, of course, part of, and the Zero Carbon Hydrogen Australia, which you are the general.
Yeah, thank you. So Smart Energy Council is actually one of the oldest renewable energy bodies in Australia, which is incredible when you think about it. We've been around actually since the 50s advocating for energy and energy transition and making sure we're representing industry. But Zero Carbon Hydrogen Australia is actually a division of the Smart Energy Council, and our role really is to advocate for green hydrogen in Australia. And we're looking at green hydrogen products and projects, but we're also thinking about green hydrogen derivatives as well. So we're looking at things like green iron, green ammonia, even sustainable aviation fuel. And our role is really to provide an intersection between industry and government to actually advocate for what the industry needs and what we need to do to help Australian businesses grow, but also position Australia globally as part of that renewable energy superpower narrative that I think, you know, we've all heard about Australia as well. So we look at really our domestic economy. We look at how we sit in the global economy around hydrogen. We also work within policy forums and leverage kind of key regulations and try to harmonise some of the standards across Australia, so that down in the nitty-gritty of the policy. And then we're also running a zero carbon certification scheme. So really looking at ensuring that the hydrogen that we're working with is low carbon or green of nature. Certainly our mandate to ensure that the hydrogen we use as we go forward in Australia is green of nature. And we recognise there's a transition period, but we're certainly keen to be part of it as well. So across Smart Energy Council and Zero Carbon Hydrogen Australia, we've got around 1,400 members, which is fantastic. And they range from the entire, you know, value chain of renewables, including, you know, research and development, technology, universities, large scale proponents, international organizations as well, and also governments. So we're lucky to have a very good grasp of what is happening here domestically, but also what is happening, I guess, in our region and more broadly globally as well.
Amazing, amazing. So Smart Energy Council is one of the main organizations, let's say, when it comes to hydrogen in Australia, if that's correct. Yeah,
so absolutely.
You are in the best position to explain to us the current state of the green hydrogen in Australia. What's going on? We understand this. We read every day that Australia is one of the leading countries when it comes to hydrogen and policies, investments, production as well. So what's the deal with Australia?
Yeah, look, I think when we talk about green hydrogen, we have to kind of understand what Australia's current position is when it comes to decarbonisation, really. And under the Albanese government, I've got the figures here, we're hoping to reduce our emissions by 43% below 2005 levels by 2030 and reach a net zero target of by 2050 as well. So when we think about the federal government kind of setting this agenda around climate change and what we need to achieve, I think green hydrogen falls really naturally into that transition. And, you know, our Prime Minister Albanese has been in the job, you know, a little over 12 months, maybe 14 months. He's really been advocating for this narrative that Australia can become a superpower when it comes to renewables. Actually, Australia was one of the first countries to create a green hydrogen strategy. So behind Japan and Germany, Australia was ready at the forefront, thinking about what the hydrogen strategy and what our hydrogen opportunity looks like back in 2019. That national strategy is actually currently going in a review, and we'll see the first reiterations of that strategy go into public release probably in the next month or so. But I think what we really need to see at the moment within Australia is this ongoing kind of drive of domestic demand, as well as the international opportunity. So there's a bit of a push and pull at the moment, as you will within Australia. Is it an international export opportunity around hydrogen and its derivatives, or is there something that we can do domestically? And it's exciting because we're a nascent industry in Australia, and we're kind of at, I think 2024 is going to be the year when we see a lot more projects come to final investment decision. And we're seeing a lot more investment and opportunities. But if you think about the size and the scope of the Australian opportunity, we have like 40% of the global pipeline of projects here in Australia, something like $200 to $300 billion worth of projects in the pipeline. So the opportunity is massive. And it's just a question of how we get to the next step. And certainly, and this is not a trend that we're seeing globally, is this kind of unlocking the demand side of things to create the supply. So this chicken and egg scenario that everybody talks about with hydrogen. But we're seeing this kind of trilogy between universities and innovation and emerging tech, and we see businesses and industry driving this as well, and also government. So one of our key roles actually that we're doing at Zero Carbon Hydrogen Australia is actually trying to bring those three pillars together to actually kind of unlock these projects and start getting some to scale. But we've seen there's a whole range of end use cases in Australia around hydrogen as well, which I think is really important to touch on. You know, for export, we're seeing a lot of opportunities around green ammonia, but certainly also around liquefied hydrogen in the region. And then domestically, we're seeing huge opportunities to actually use green hydrogen to create green iron through, this high direct iron infrastructure component, actually embed the decarbonisation into our iron ore exports. And, Australia's biggest export is iron ore. It's a huge opportunity. The numbers are incredible. But if we actually start to do some of that value adding to our critical minerals before we ship overseas, where there's something like 6 to 9% of global carbon emissions we can reduce. So the numbers are extraordinary if we can we can do that as well. And then we see things around transport and infrastructure, and certainly using gas blending with hydrogen for some of the chemical processes. We hope that won't necessarily be an opportunity for greenwashing. We hope for great transparency, certainly from our organisation, if that does occur. But we're seeing so many opportunities. I think the time is to harness those and kind of unlock them to get them across the line.
Do you think there will be enough hydrogen to export to decarbonize the heavy industry, which is a lot in Australia, and also to provide energy for cities and the society?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're actually, when we talk about electricity, I guess hydrogen for grid stability, there are projects happening in Australia. If you look at the South Australian Hydrogen Jobs Plan, it's all about creating hydrogen to secure the grid in South Australia. South Australia is hoping to be 100% on renewables in the next few years. Their numbers are extraordinary. They're the first state in Australia to have the highest rate of solar rooftop penetration. You may not have seen the Twitter exchange between some of our ministers at the time and Elon Musk committing to the biggest Tesla battery system installed in 100 days or free. I think there's some other parts of California that have overtaken South Australia now, but it's an incredible state when it comes to renewables. The challenge for us at the moment is that international demand is already here, and we've got projects that are looking at international offtake at the moment. We don't necessarily have the demand when it comes to domestic consumption at the moment. So what we're seeing is a bit of a first move on international for export, which will then create some of those key supply chains that we need to actually unlock domestic demand. So last year in the federal budget, the Australian government announced a hydrogen head start project, which is $2 billion for 2 to 3 scale, large scale hydrogen projects.
How did it go with the launch? How did it go?
Yes, that's a good question. So we've gone to shortlist. So we've got 6 companies that are shortlisted at the moment, and I can read them out to you because I've got them here in front of me. Mm-hmm. But we've got 6 projects to shortlist, and then we will actually have the announcement in and around who was able to secure that funding by October this year. And effectively, it's a production credit funding type arrangement over a decade. So we've got a project in Western Australia using ammonia, Port of Newcastle green hydrogen project, which is in New South Wales, the Hunter Valley Hydrogen Hub, a e-fuel facility down in Tasmania, and a project up in northern Western Australia called the H2 Kinoa Project. And one which I think is extraordinary is the Central Queensland Hydrogen Project. And the reason I think this one is quite extraordinary is because it's located in a key industrial area in central Queensland, a state that's been well known for its coal exports historically. And this is right in the hub of that region. So the Central Queensland Hydrogen Project is actually a consortium of 5 companies. So you've got Stanwell, which is a state-owned coal provider. Actually, they produce historically fossil fuel electricity to Queensland. You've got the Japanese company. So you've got Iwatani Corporation, Kansai Electric Power. You've got Mirabani, and then you've got Capel Infrastructure from Singapore. It's one of their key investments. So within that consortium of 5, you've got your technology providers, you've got your off-takers, and you've got your infrastructure and investment, as well as your proponents in Australia to make the project happen. And that will be producing, I think it's around 200 tons of renewable hydrogen per day in 2028, so only a couple of years away, 800 tons per day by 2030, and exporting around $17.2 billion of hydrogen exports over its 30-year lifespan. So the numbers are huge, and it's on a global scale, it's one of the biggest as well. And so that really has this opportunity to start the process of that international demand. But then you've got local off-takers in Gladstone, you've got Steelworks, you've got large and heavy industry, hard to abate industry. You've also got infrastructure lines where it's quite easy to blend that hydrogen with gas. Again, noting the need for transparency around that to avoid greenwashing. But you've got production starting, and I think it'll be these first movers that will start to unlock the capital and the investment in Australia particularly.
You mentioned, it was one of my questions, but you mentioned already a couple of Japanese giants operating in Australia. Who is the largest foreign investor in hydrogen in Australia? Is it Japan?
I would say at the moment Japan. I think the numbers as it stands, From the top 100 projects, 30 of them have Japanese investment in Australia.
And
so
what would be their interest aside, of course, from investment? Is it because Japan will be one of the largest importers of hydrogen in the future? Will it be to import hydrogen eventually from Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm conscious that I can't speak on behalf of the Japanese government, but but my understanding is, Japan has signed on to the 2015 Paris Agreement, so they have a legal obligation in the international frame of works to actually decarbonize. And one of the things that Japan struggles with, particularly, is this combination of a huge amount of energy offtake with a small amount of land use. So they don't have land like Australia to have, a whole lot of solar arrays and alike. So they actually have a real critical need to decarbonize their domestic consumption of energy. And they really need to think about how they're going to do that. So hydrogen for them is is key, right? Because they have a lot of chemical processing. They have a lot of steel manufacturing in Japan. It's one of their key industries. But there's also a lot of, you know, Japan is well known for its innovation and technology. It's well known for its production of manufacturing more broadly. So it has this huge demand. And what Australia can do, and we're not alone, I should mention this, you know, Chile is also eyeing Japan as a key offtaker of their hydrogen. So okay. is the US, of course, so is the Middle East as well. So we really need to think about what Australia's point of difference is and what we can offer Japan. You know, we have a great trading relationship with Japan. We have in really strong diplomatic relationships. We've got, we're a trusted partner in the region. We also sit on a lot of the same forums, G7, G20, and Quad, which is the four countries, the US, Japan, India, and Australia, which was set up as a security dialogue, but is also certainly now more than ever around trade. It's about energy. I think one thing that we've seen globally is this shift away from having energy considered as part of a transition or part of climate change. Actually having a reliable source of energy is critical for national security. So one thing that the invasion of Ukraine kind of taught us and certainly put particularly the global north and Western leaders back in the mindset of thinking about energy from an energy security perspective and a national security perspective. And I think we see that as every country wants to secure their domestic supply and how can they do it? One thing Australia can do for Japan is actually secure that domestic supply. We're geographically very close, and we certainly have an abundance of renewable energy. I think it was, in our 2019 strategy, Dr. Alan Finkel, the chief scientist of Australia at the time, talked about how Australia can actually power, I think it was 2/3 of the global demand for hydrogen by 2050, just because the amount of renewable energy access we have and the abundance of sun and wind power.
Of course, gas abundance in abundant in Australia. So, that's right. How are you going to use that? It's not green hydrogen, I understand, but it's low emissions, no? It's
Look, I'm probably
it's
not
still
the best.
It's still better than yeah. yeah. So, are you going to export it more to countries that want to produce their own low emissions? Hydrogen, what are you going to do?
Yeah, look, I think I'm probably not the best person to talk positively about the gas network in Australia. But look, I think there's, you know, we do LNG is one of our big exports. Actually, you know, coal and LNG are our biggest exports to Japan, for example. There's certainly it's a transition, right? We can't turn off these things altogether. And particularly when we think about natural gas and what we need to do there, I think there's just a bit of transparency that we need in the process around understanding what the opportunities are and whatnot. I think in Australia, we've seen record profits from the gas industry over the last couple of years. And that's certainly not been, I think the majority of the Australian consumers are concerned about the rising cost of electricity and gas, particularly given the amount of profits that these guys have earned on the back of perhaps one of the, you know, most challenging times for everyone globally around cost of living and the like.
Okay. And more about international collaborations, Joanna. Mm-hmm. Aside from Japan, which other countries are of prime importance for Australia too?
Yeah, of course. So we've got like Korea, for example, another huge off-taker potentially of our green iron. They certainly have interests. Korean steelmaking company POSCO has recently announced a huge project up in the Pilbara, which is the northwest of Australia. So we see Korea as certainly a key stakeholder. We have bilateral relationships with them around, I think it's a clean energy bilateral partnership that we have with Korea. We also have partnerships with Singapore in the region, India. We have a low emissions tech partnership with India as well. You know, I think Australia is really trying to make sure it stands not just for its own domestic growth, but also to develop and perhaps provide leadership in the region as well. China will be a huge off-taker of our green iron as well. And then we've got collaborations more broadly. So Europe, we see a lot of our industry have joint ventures and partnerships across Europe and also the US as well, particularly down in areas like California that are doing so much in hydrogen hubs, which is based on a model that Australia has been so successful at over the past few years as well. So there's a lot of what we've seen is a lot of bilateral relationships, government to government, but we're also seeing more industry to industry collaboration as well. So last year, the Smart Energy Council, along with Zero Carbon Hydrogen Australia, took 34 industry leaders over to India. We had four cities in 10 days, I think, and we managed to see Prime Minister Modi flip the coin of one of the stages of cricket. And if you know anything about Australians and India, they both have a love for cricket that is perhaps unfathomable at times. So very excited.
Did you go with them in India? Did you visit as well?
Yeah, so I led part of that delegation, and it was fantastic actually. To see the stadium in Ahmedabad, which is where we kicked off, and we had Prime Minister Albanese, Australian Prime Minister, there to actually open our delegation, and we travelled to Delhi, we travelled to Mumbai or Bombay, and then down to Bengaluru. We saw some really incredible technology and innovation out of the Indian side, and obviously they were the hosts of G20 last year, and mm-hmm. under the Prime Minister Modi, huge innovation and strength of the Indian government. So what we saw particularly after that delegation, just in and amongst our smart energy cohort, something close to $1.5 billion of forecasted revenue from deals that were made on that trip, which is, the numbers speak for themselves. So I think what Australia has as an advantage, we've always been really well known for our innovation and technology. I think that comes from a long-standing, perhaps even if you look back, right back to solar, when Professor Martin Green was, one of the first ones to design and perhaps perfect the solar cell, now used in over 90% of solar PV arrays around the world. So we have this global reputation of innovation and technology. We also, as I mentioned before, have a huge pipeline of projects. So countries want to invest in Australia. They want to be part of that. They want to secure their offtake. They want to be part of that energy security consortium. But they also want to learn and grow, particularly countries like India, where they can actually create and understand the hydrogen economy and how it'll work to be able to then replicate that within a domestic market within India as well. So the opportunities are boundless, I think. And when we consider hydrogen, I think no one is considering it jurisdiction by jurisdiction. Everyone is thinking about it as a global supply chain.
Exactly. That's actually very important. Yeah. Mm. How do you see the foreign investment though in the field of hydrogen? From the numbers we see, it's not as much as we want it to be, but of course it's picking up. So what are your expectations for 2024, and what are the biggest challenges for investors into hydrogen?
Look, investment's really hard when it comes to hydrogen, because my understanding is, the capital expenditure is really, really big. And so what you need to do is you need to de-risk the investment, right? And you de-risk the investment by having really strong market signals, by having really strong policy frameworks, and by having a really safe investment environment to do that. One thing Australia does have is a safe and steady, political environment as well as investment environment. We don't kind of have these hyperboles of changes within our domestic economy like that. But what we are lacking is a really strong market signal. So I'm really hopeful that this year, 2024, we will see the National Hydrogen Strategy come out. That'll send an incredibly strong signal to market. We're also hoping to see some production credits or hydrogen production credits come out in our federal budget announced in May, something similar to what the US did with the Inflation Reduction Act, something similar to what the Europeans have got with their Green Industrial Plan and others as well. Japan last year released their Contract for Difference scheme, something like $30 billion Australian to be spent by the end of 2024. So we're waiting for that. We're waiting for a really strong direction that will kind of give investor confidence for the market. But in saying that, you know, we do see opportunities. And again, back to the Central Queensland Hydrogen Project, it's a great example, right? You've got your consortium with everybody in it. So you've created your own ecosystem of structure around how to create the project to go forward. I think one of the challenges is around bankability of hydrogen. You know, everyone wants to secure your hydrogen for these huge long and offtake agreements. The capital costs are large. Again, we're in this chicken and egg phase. I actually just jumped off the GH2. The Global Hydrogen Organizations just finished a brilliant webinar on unlocking the finance in and around hydrogen. And I strongly suggest everyone go check it out. It was really interesting, particularly listening to those in the World Bank talk about the requirements and what governments can do to kind of secure the loans as well, concessional financing and alike, but also what industry can do to kind of unlock that as well. I don't see a shortage necessarily of investment or will. The challenge is, unlocking that investment. And I use that term a lot because we're so close to just turning the key and opening the door and having it there. I will give you one example, which I think is a good one. We saw a company, a member company of ours, recently do our zero carbon certification scheme. I think it was May last year. And what they were able to do was actually do a pre-certification to confirm that their plant and infrastructure actually had the capacity to deliver renewable hydrogen at scale. So it came under, you know, their FEED study and alike, but it really put a stamp on it and said, yep, this is going to be green hydrogen, which was really important to their investor. So they were actually able to unlock the investor, create that capital, which then secured the project and actually secured the offtake agreement all within a really, really short period. And that project will go to FID in the next 6 weeks. So we've seen that it's just these mechanisms and policies and regulations, strong market signal, all of those things will help. But, you know, Australia has a good investment economy and opportunity. We're also, we're also seeing changes. Our treasurer last week announced that there potentially could be changes to our foreign investment review requirements in Australia as well that will come out in the next 6 weeks, which I think will certainly unlock more capital coming in from overseas for these projects, particularly those at scale.
We would be very interested to see these changes, of course. That was one of my next questions, actually, because many countries are entering the race to produce hydrogen to attract foreign investors, which is, of course, very important. And I was going to ask, what would Australia do, to gain more from the race? But I suppose we're going to know in 6 weeks more details, huh?
That's right. You know, we're so close to a federal election. So watch this space. I say you'll see a lot of politicians, particularly in the next few weeks, starting to set the groundwork for some big announcements coming out in early May. So we're certainly looking forward to it.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So, Joanna, to sum up everything, your own vision for hydrogen, green hydrogen in Australia, internationally, how do you see 2024 unfolding and, of course, 2030 and up to 2050, as you mentioned earlier?
I love this question because, I love to predict the future. And I am assuming that I'm going to be wrong. But look, I think when I, from my personal perspective, when I think about renewable energy more broadly and I think about this global decarbonisation that we're on, it's not really about us. It's actually about the future generations that we're looking after. And there's a really famous quote, society prospers when old men plant trees under the shade that they will never sit. And I think, that is the kind of opportunity that we have now to really decarbonize all of our heavy industry through hydrogen, but also electrification of everything we possibly can as well. So what I'm thinking is at the moment, we're kind of on the cusp of something really interesting and something really great. But we're also, the scale is huge. This is a green industrialization on a global scale. And we haven't, certainly not in my lifetime, and I'm assuming not in your lifetime as well, seen this kind of industrialization that is going to take place over the next 20 to 30 years. But I think it's exciting. And I think what I'm seeing more and more coming particularly out of Australia is this new and emerging talent. We've got so many young people that are thinking about renewables, that want to work in this space. We recently just hosted a Hydrogen Innovation Challenge. Our winners, Swinburne University Air Hub, looking at, you know, hydrogen-powered aircraft and drones and all of this incredible technology and innovation around, you know, we've got others, you know, electrolyzers and fuel cell technology that's constantly evolving. I think the opportunity is great. And I think we're not even at the start line yet to what the possibilities are. But in saying that, you know, the reality is Australia is perhaps not where we should have been. You know, 2019, we started really strong, third in the world with our national hydrogen strategy. And we've seen other jurisdictions take over. It's almost been 2 years now since the US announced the Inflation Reduction Act. And after that, you know, Australia is still really yet to respond in a strong way on what we need to do to kind of push forward and make sure that we have the same kind of investment. The Hydrogen Head Start was a down payment in that, and I recognise that. But we're really hoping for some really strong outcomes, particularly in our budget this year, to really send those market signals. So I think when it comes to Australia and it comes to hydrogen, I think we're going to have a really strong export opportunity. I think it's going to create a lot of jobs in our regions, particularly regions that were previously dependent on jobs in and around coal and gas. I think there's going to be a lot of new and fantastic opportunities for those local communities to transition from those heavy and hard to abate industries, but actually retain community, create, you know, continue to create and prosper in regional Australia, which I think is a fantastic thing. I think we'll have, you know, the largest amount of green iron produced here in Australia. Our critical minerals will have that value add and decarbonizing embedded into them as they go before they go overseas. So I think Australia will be a leader. Do I think we'll be driving hydrogen cars in the next 10 years in Australia? Probably not. For the majority of people, I think we've got an opportunity here for electric vehicles. But I think, you know, 10, 15 years and beyond, particularly around fleet cars and more broadly, I think we'll see that, particularly Australia is a huge country. So having that long range that hydrogen can provide us will be fantastic. I think we'll also see hydrogen, you know, in green ammonia. We're already seeing that already, you know, transforming our mining industry, but also transforming our agricultural industry as well. And I certainly hope to see it everywhere in a sustainable way. And I hope that by the time we get, you know, for 50 years time, we're only talking about green hydrogen and everything is made from renewables. And I hope both of us are happily retired by that point as well.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So you think we're going to see earlier an aircraft flying with hydrogen instead of cars?
You know, I do actually, whether it be, you know, hydrogen propelled or sustainable aviation fuel. We have hydrogen cars in Australia. I should point that out. But I just think we have such a strong EV opportunity here as well. But yeah, we'll certainly see hydrogen powered aircraft and sustainable aviation fuel in Australia. Actually, you know, we have a huge opportunity here because we're so far away from everybody else, so we have to import all our aviation fuel. So if we can actually produce it ourselves, that would be fantastic. And I'm not sure if it'll be remembered, but Minister Nick Debrenny, the energy minister in Queensland, said that some of the athletes at our Olympics coming up in a few years' time will be travelling around the country in hydrogen-powered aircraft. So that would be pretty fantastic to see. And certainly I think for, you know, transport and freight and light rail, and we're going to see a wonderful hydrogen future here in Oz.
Excellent. Perfect. Joanna, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And we hope for the best. Australia, I'm sure, is going to be leading the way. We get to see how the future unfolds. And we hope to have you again next year for an update.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to updating you on those changes to the Foreign Investment Act that's potentially coming out, and and potentially our budget, which you know, will be a shiny market signal that we need to take this
forward. That would be great.
Wonderful.
I will contact you actually in 6 weeks. In 6 weeks, I'll get in touch with you to get all the updates we need.
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you.